Welcome to the Developer Podcast, where we talk about how to make cities worth living in, which often has to do with the spaces between the buildings as much as the buildings themselves. I'm Christine Murray, founding editor-in-chief of The Developer and director of the Festival of Place. Our ambition is to break down silos and bring people together to unpick what makes places that thrive. Today, we're talking about the role of a town hall. How do these buildings function as the civic heart of UK places? And given the chance to redo one, what would we change? Your Town Hall in Brixton is a mixed-use project to breathe new life into the town hall and council offices while adding affordable housing and upgrading historic sites and public spaces. I'm joined by James Stockdale, Development Director at Muse.
Hi, Christine, and thank you for having me. My name's James Stockdale. I'm a development director at Muse Places. I'm based out of our London office in Soho. I've been at Muse for about 8 years. Prior to that, I was at another developer known as St. Mulban for over 10 years. So plenty of experience in bringing forward mixed-use, complex, long-term, multi-phased placemaking schemes across the country. I think my role covers the complete cycle, really, from bidding and winning new business through to agreeing and documenting deal structures, obviously working alongside my colleagues within the Muse team, appointing design teams, planning, delivery. We have a legal in-house team, we have an in-house sales and marketing team, and aftercare, estate management. So yeah, working closely with all parties and our partners, obviously, working at Muse Places, all about partnership working. So I cross probably all areas of the development cycle as part of the delivery of our projects.
And what do you like best about all those different things that you do?
I think for me it's seeing the final delivery and seeing them being used, both the people interacting, and I get very proud going back to projects and to be honest, you showing my family, my mother, my father, my brothers, and this is what I do, and I think I'm very proud and I'm lucky to work at Muse and be able to do that.
So we're going to talk about a project that we're going to visit it with you. We're going to do your favorite thing kind of right now, which is your new town hall project in Brixton. Can you tell me a little bit about this project, what it encompasses, and a little bit about, I guess the starting point, which would be, what was there before and what was the ambition for this project?
Yeah, of course. So in 2014, after a very competitive OG process, Muse were selected as the development partner by the London Borough of Lambeth to deliver the Your New Town Hall project, which is in the heart of Brixton. And for those of you who don't know where Brixton is, it's a London Borough in Zone 2. It's at the end of the Victoria Line. So it's very well known. There's a lot of traffic there. There's both in buses and bicycles and footfall. There's a very famous music venue there called the Brixton Academy. So it's a very well visited, well known part of Brixton with a very rich history. And the aim of the project was to effectively rationalize the council's building stock. A lot of it was largely outdated and outside of Lambeth, outside of Brixton, sorry. And they were looking at rationalising it from 14 buildings they were occupying down to 2. And by doing so, this was going to help them reduce the running costs, maintenance costs, and also centralise and modernise the borough's facilities and effectively create a more efficient organization out of 2 buildings. So our partnership spanned across 5 sites, which are all located on Brixton Hill and Acre Lane in Brixton. So right in the heart of Brixton, as you come out of the tube, literally 2 minutes away. And through a mixture of new build, and refurbishing some existing heritage assets, we've created a new urban neighborhood. And it's made up of many, many different components. We've got a new civic office and customer center, which is located on Brixton Hill. We've preserved and enhanced the Grade 2 listed town hall. We've created a new major cycle hub and changing facilities and a cafe. And also, really quite important for the project was delivering new homes for the borough. So we've delivered 194 new homes, of which 40% were affordable and delivered in partnership with Notting Hill Housing Genesis. Those homes have been delivered across the three sites in which the council were operating out of, which then they vacated to move into the new civic office and refurbished town hall. So maximizing their existing buildings and sites to effectively bring forward the new homes. The homes.
So I'm looking at, you know, some of the, you know, the experience of the place, and the town hall still retains some, you know, some quite grand spaces or atriums. I was reflecting on the role of the town hall, and you talk about it needing to kind of rationalize, centralize, or modernize. But it also, you know, is this point of like civic focus. It's a place where kind of people have quite a lot of pride in their town hall, or they were often built with quite a lot of pride. Has much changed in, you know, the idea of modernizing a town hall? You know, what remains the same and what changes?
So, I mean, the town hall was built between 1906 and 1908. So the world has changed a lot, obviously. It's the civic heart of the borough, and it's located right, as I said, in the centre of Brixton. It's a very well loved building. It's very easily identifiable. It's got a beautiful exterior made of Portland stone and red brick, and a massive clock tower, which, you know, it's a real focal point in the heart of Brixton. But I think over time, the community had really disconnected from the building. And I think that was one of the key objectives, was reconnecting the community with the building. You know, it is a building for the people of the borough. And I think sometimes people forget that. And, you know, it needed to reflect the changing needs of the community, which again, that's no one's fault. That's just evolution. That's just time. And taking a Grade 2 listed building, it's not easy to adapt quickly and easily and affordably. You know, we're dealing with public purse here. And what we had to really do was look at how we could take what was there in terms of the existing town hall and create something that matched the expectations of not just the borough residents, but also the employees of the council, which was a massive part of this, was creating workspace that was fit for a modern organization that people wanted to work for. Staff retention, as we all know, is a really key element. And it's, you know, going to an office with beautiful views and comfort cooling and lovely, nice and airy, and, facilities which are fit for a modern workspace, you know, it's an absolute key now. And it was challenging because it's located on a very, very busy junction. You know, it's flanked on both sides by very busy roads. The front door effectively opens out onto that junction. It's not very welcoming. If you have mobility issues, you know, you couldn't get in the front door. You had to go around the back. And even once you made it in, you weren't able to access the whole building. You know, it just wasn't fit for the modern society. And over the years, it had evolved. There have been temporary extensions. Porter cabins were being used. It's before I even got involved in the project, I actually visited the site to register with my wife to get married. And it was in a porter cabin, and it was kind of difficult to get to. And when we got there, it was kind of leaking. And it was, you know, a real reflection of where they were and where they needed to get to in terms of actually revitalizing the town hall and building a community hub fit for a modern London borough.
Like you say, I mean, many people's experiences are either, you know, citizenship ceremonies or, you know, marriage licenses, which are, you know, hugely happy occasions. You want your town hall to kind of reflect it. You want it to belong to you in that way. I wanted to ask about, the design team. You talked about part of your job, working with the architects. People always ask, how do you choose your architects? I mean, perhaps you could talk about that relationship here. And, and perhaps in general, what is important to you?
Absolutely. The architects on this project were Cartwright Pickard, who were involved across all the phases. So they were involved on the residential new build, along with the new civic office. They were part of our bid team. So as part of that process, we would have gone out and interviewed a number of architects to see who was best suited. Cartwright Pickard had a fantastic track record of building civic facilities, and we had a very strong relationship with them. And like all members of the design team, it was really, really important to have a team and who shared our vision and shared our principles and values. So sustainability obviously is really, really key, and it's very key with Cartwright Pickard. So again, we were able to do some really innovative and clever things as part of this project, and as I said, that would apply across the whole of the design team. We don't have our favorites. We always, each project's very different, and it's really, really important that you get people involved who are enthused, excited, but also looking to break the status quo a bit as well. So that's an integral part of our selection process.
So carbon was a big part of this project, wasn't it? I mean, they're kind of about cutting the carbon footprint of the council. Can you talk a bit about how that was accomplished and that kind of goal to reduce carbon emissions?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, not only was it reconnecting the community with the town hall and creating modern workspace for the employees and facilities fit for a modern borough, it was also, a key objective was pounds and pence, and it was effectively reducing the operational costs by a third, which involved the reduction of the carbon footprint, which was a real challenge. You're dealing with, a building built in 1908, and there's huge areas of preservation that you can't just go in and you can't just apply your usual approaches. You have to take things really, really carefully, and you have to involve the right people as well. And the new civic centre was effectively BREEAM Excellent, which was fantastically a real challenge, but fantastic that we achieved. We have an energy center, which is located on the roof of the civic center, which feeds the heating and hot water to all the residential in the project, apart from the final phase, which unfortunately is just a bit too far away. And also all the chilled water for all the commercial space. So all the offices and the town hall and the new gym, which is open on the ground floor and basement of Ivor House, which was a 1930s Art Deco department store, which has been refurbished. It's all fed off that central energy centre, which, again, real challenge. And there was a lot of messaging and education around occupiers. People were buying homes, and you have to educate them that, this is the system that you're buying into. You can't just go and put your own boiler in. This is part of the story, and explaining the sustainability credentials around it. And that's the same with the commercial occupiers as well. You get a fit out contractor come in, and they're normally just sticking in their air conditioning in, and you're saying, actually, you don't have to. You can connect to the chilled water system that's already here. Huge advances in that. With that comes, greater responsibility around educating and making sure that you're passing on to also mancos, so the estate, the building mancos, so the residents who effectively who own those buildings. There needs to be clarity around that. So it's well used. In the civic as well, we used, and at the time it was the first time it was used in the UK, it was a sage glass. So it's a huge atrium at the front, which is effectively a solar controlled glazing system. It changes depending on the amount of sunlight. So effectively it's maintenance free. So you haven't got blinds or shades, which we all know can be a bit of a a challenge to operate at the best of times, let alone on a giant atrium at the front of a civic. We've got a brown roof. We've got extra planting. There was a number of ways that we hit our BREEAM accent. In the town hall itself, there was obviously more challenges because it wasn't a new build. So we had to look at different ways of achieving that. So, for example, the thermal performance of the existing walls wasn't great, as you could probably get in as a building built in 1908. But obviously, we couldn't just go in and apply a new load of external and internal insulation. So we had to literally find all the air gaps, and we had to seal it to reduce air permeability. And the town hall was completely stripped of all of the existing services throughout the whole building. And that was down to the IT. That's the heating and cooling, which again connected to the site-wide energy center. What else did we do? It's a completely car-free scheme. We got no cars on the site, which is, again, was a real challenge. Yeah, the basement of the town hall had been turned into a car park. So again, you know, there were cars literally in the basement of the town hall and along Buckner Road, which was a road which ran behind the town hall, and still does, town hall and the civic. So again, it was really, really important. And there was a real focus on making people and bicycles the priority, you know, take the focus away from cars. And with that, it enabled also by creating a semi shared surface effectively between the two buildings, it enabled us to deal with a lot of the antisocial behavior which had been on that road previously. It had been a road with car parking along it and a little car park as well. So 24/7, it was pretty dark at night. It wasn't very well used. So, it, you know, there was a lot of challenges around policing it. And what we've done is now created it. There's clear sight lines. There's planting. And actually, yeah, we've made people the priority, which has actually transformed the area. Hopefully everyone who's listening can go and have a look and see. And, you know, it's what we're very proud about. And the sustainability credentials of the buildings is certainly something that we strive from day one.
You mentioned the housing and that kind of process of, you know, behavior change or education around the use of the homes. But I wanted to ask you, it's, you know, the scheme is, the housing was 40% affordable. There's just been reports in the paper about how less affordable housing is being delivered in London. I mean, is that, you know, could this be achieved today? You know, are you seeing challenges in, you know, going forward in the delivery of the homes? Were there challenges then?
Yeah, there was viability challenges throughout the project. And we had to, you know, this was public purse. You know, and with all our projects, it's value for money. You know, we're honest and we're open and we're very transparent, open book. And we had to have a lot of, you know, honest conversations. And also actually, and going back to the point about the project team, was also finding ways that we could save money, which was, you know, was a key element to this. And that wasn't just within our design team, but I was also with getting our contractors involved early on and assisting. In terms of delivering 40% affordable, you know, for us, that was an absolute certainty. That wasn't something that we were willing to reduce to assist with the affordability of it and the viability. We worked with Notting Hill Genesis. They took all the affordable in both the new buildings that we built, which is Somerset House and Moreham Place, which effectively sat on a dilapidated old office building. And they also took all the homes, all the affordable homes in what was the old Olive Morris house. Yeah, it's challenging. Viability is challenging across all schemes at the moment. You know, rising construction costs, dampened values, and, you know, interest rates where we are. It's a real challenge. And yes, there's gaps, and, you know, grant funding is required. And sensible conversations about tenure as well, because that has a real impact. So yeah, I don't think there's a quick win to it. And it's certainly something all of us are facing across the country. It's not a London centric thing. It's everywhere. And it's working with our partners and trying to find ways of delivery, whether that's through, as I said, through grant funding or forward sale, that we can help deliver it. Or on these multi-phase schemes, is actually delivering the more profitable elements at the front end, and then utilizing extra or some of the profits to help deliver the more challenging aspects of a project, which MusePaces has done on other schemes throughout the country.
So is that part of that conversation about tenure is also around the phased delivery of different tenures? So you might bring forward homes for sale first in order to fund the construction of the social housing later.
Yeah, it can be. And I think it depends on the quantum, and it depends on, you know, you've got to manage the market. You don't want to just suddenly stick 200 units on the market. That's not going to help anyone. So, yeah, maximizing value is really important. And with any regeneration project, it's making sure that you create the place, because without the place, you won't create the value. You know, there's talk about the halo effect. You know, you go in and it's X pounds per square foot today. But, you know, once you've built, you know, all the public realm and you've got new commercial space and you've got the town hall and new homes, it will be X plus, you know, whatever it is. Is it 10, 15%? And I think it's really, it's interesting. I think there's been a lot of work around trying to find that magic formula of how you can create that, and how, you know, I'd love to be able to sit here and say with a plan and say, you know, we do X, Y, and Z, it's going to increase the values by whatever it is. But unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. And we're in a market which goes up and down. And, you know, in Brixton, it's been a fantastic project to work on. And actually, you know, we were always very, very confident it was going to work. You know, there hadn't been a lot of new build in Brixton. There'd been a lot in Vauxhall to the north, and there'd been a huge amount in Streatham to the south. But actually, Brixton kind of sat in a bit of a black hole. It was really interesting to see the level of demand from the locals for new homes. And it's the phasing of it was, you're absolutely right, the phasing of it was really important on that.
It's my understanding that there's a department store that's been reused as part of the project. And, this is a kind of thing that's coming up again and again. People are developing different ways of adopting, reusing, refurbishing, reinventing, reimagining department stores. Can you talk a little bit about any learnings from that, about the building type as a whole, what you've done with it, and then also just, you know, perhaps some inspiration or advice or challenges and opportunities of these spaces?
Yeah, so the Iver House is a former cooperative department store. So Brixton, again, you learn all these new things working on these amazing projects. Brixton was the home of the first sort of department stores in the UK, brought over from, I think it was Paris. I've heard many different stories, but so there's a number of department stores in Brixton, and Iver House is one of them. It's a beautiful building, and it's a historic Art Deco. It had been used by Lambeth as offices for many years. It really wasn't realizing its true potential. So we sensitively restored and repurposed that as new homes, and on the ground floor and basement as commercial space, which has just opened up as the UK's largest Anytime Fitness. There's a bit of a plug. That has been an absolute pleasure to work on. It's a beautiful building. I had a lot of challenges. It had a listed facade. We went down the route of actually adding an additional story to the building, which sort of seamlessly blends in with the original building, which enabled us to maximize floor space and provide some cracking views, which then goes back to the whole generating value point. You know, where could we create additional value that would then help other elements of the project? And, you know, that is a good example of that. The building had been used for many years as an office. So unfortunately, a lot of the original features had been damaged. So, you know, again, it was using our design team and getting in there really early and seeing what we could maintain and what we could get. And actually also, elements which we could retain that might not be perfect, And that was the same in the town hall, actually. You know, if you go into the town hall, and we didn't really talk about the atrium we created, which is this fantastic four-story atrium, which now has a bridge link across, so you can come into the town hall and walk straight across, and it floods the whole building with light, and it's a brilliant. And what we did was we retained the external tiling, which was damaged in parts, but, you know, and it was a decision that we had to make. You know, we all sat down with the partners to decide what we'd do. I'm really delighted we did, because it looks fantastic and it tells the story. And we don't, you know, the history of that building, you know, isn't brand new. There is a story to be told. And actually those tiles sort of reflect that. And it was the same in either house. So including this terrazzo, there's a mesh lift shaft, which again we preserved and enhanced. And again, learning something new about Brixton was this certain type of tile and a very unique color, which were in these department stores. And again, either house had this very specific color, so we had to get a specialist brought in to try and match the color and recreate those where possible. So they line the main entrance and the stairway. So the common areas really share some really beautiful historic features. The actual apartments themselves, we've tried to retain wherever possible the sort of the original steel crittle windows, and again just floods all the homes have so much light. It's wonderful. And it was similar to the town hall, actually, where it was on a very busy road, so it was very noisy, air quality wasn't great. So, you know, that was a key objective, not just in creating homes that are fit for purpose, but also the office space as well. So we introduced, instead of replacing the glazing, actually putting secondary glazing, which again, you have visions of the old 1970s secondary glazing that doesn't look too great. But actually this, with very thin frames, it works perfectly. And it effectively enables, you know, the air quality to be significantly better. And acoustically, a lot better as well. But in terms of the challenges, well, I've listed quite a few there. But you know, building height, the height of the second floor was a real challenge, and you can't just make it any higher. So again, what we had to do was we had to get all the services and sort of cleverly integrate them into the existing structure to ensure no height was lost. Because again, the height of those the ceilings in the homes was really, really important. And also the existing structural columns, which again, is a standard problem you have with repurposing. But actually, we managed to integrate them where we could, and where we can't, you know, that's life. And you're getting so much extra stuff that sometimes, you know, you can't deal with it. And that led throughout the whole building. You know, if you were building a commercial space today, you'd want, you know, no columns in the ground floor. But, you know, that wasn't possible. And so, you know, there was lots of challenges. It's not always the easiest path, but I think that building especially, it was well worth the effort. I think in terms of learning, the ground floor and basement space, which was commercial space, I think if you'd have had this conversation with me in 2016, we would have said, yeah, that's going to be a fantastic high-end restaurant, probably, maybe a bar, you know, because that was where Brixton was heading in that period. But the world's changed again. You know, Brixton's still got a very, very strong nightlife, but actually it's condensed down as the countrywide that's happened. And actually, creating flexibility in the space, which is what we did. We made sure that if it was going to be a restaurant, that there was significant ventilation and servicing for that. Again, talking with planners and heritage officers, we couldn't have any pipe work on the outside of the building, so everything had to run through the middle of the building. Again, through the and you've got residential units above, which, you know, provides challenges. And actually, we've ended up now with a gym, which is fantastic, and it's something that Brixton has been needing a new gym for some time. And you know, it opened recently, and take up, I understand, has been very, very, very high, which reflects in the demand. So again, I think creating flexibility in commercial space is really, really important, because normally these projects, as shown here, you know, we're nearly, it'll be 10 years next year, you know, the world changes in that period, and you just got to try and build in as much flexibility as possible that you can change and adapt and evolve with it.
You mentioned the height of the second floors. Was the depth of the floor plate a challenge as well? You said they're flooded with light, but often these department stores, we think of them as exceptionally deep. Was that a problem in this on this floor plate, or not so much?
Not so much, actually. I think it wasn't too big, so there was a single stair call which we could utilize and run the hallways off both sides. So you had light from both sides. The rear of Ivor House does have some overlooking challenges. So there are residents on Porden Road, existing residents on Porden Road. So we had to be a bit careful. Some of the homes, not all of them have balconies, so we had to be careful with overlooking on that. But it split nice. As I said, you know, if you've got a new build and you're configuring homes, that they would be different to these, but that's what you're buying into. You know, they've got these amazing corner glazing units which just are beautiful, and you know, really, yeah, certainly a building we're very proud of, and really did enhance what was there, and correct, but for a modern occupier.
You mentioned air pollution around the site, the kind of prevalence of cars. Is that something that, you know, is heightened now, that awareness? Is it an awareness, you know, that you have, or is it an awareness that residents have as well? Does it make for, you know, a more difficult or harder context? And is it something that you think we're going to become, you know, increasingly sensitive to in terms of creating housing in these denser locations?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all aware of it because it was a key part of the brief with the council, was to make the workspace. You know, we had lots of meetings in there before the refurbishment, so we knew what it was like. It was hot in the summer, it was cold in the winter, it was noisy, and you know, clearly there was air pollution issues. It's on the A23. It's one of the main arterial roads that runs, you know, effectively from central London to Brighton. You know, it's double red line. You can't stop on it. So you know, you're not going to stop cars on that road, you know, whether it's buses or whoever. But, you know, you need to adapt where possible. And I think we knew on Brixton Hill and Acre Lane, they would continue to be busy arterial routes, no doubt. But where we could assist, so in terms of the additional glazing and also making sure that that the air handling systems were sufficient enough to, you know, so you didn't need to open the windows all the time. And also the roads where we did have control, so Buckner Road, which effectively runs behind or runs between Ivor House and the Town Hall and links both those buildings with the new civic and the new residential, as I said, was a very busy sort of almost like a bit of a wrap run of cars. And actually taking that out completely, so the only cars that can get, you know, there's automatic bollards which raise, so you can't just drive down there. You can only drive down there if you're the mayor or you're parking in a couple of the disabled bays. So you've taken one side of that problem away, which is great, you know. And but you can only do what you can do. And I think what we've done here is tried to intervene where possible to improve the acoustic and air quality challenges. But also being realistic that, you know, those two roads will remain busy and going forward.
I want you to take us into some of the public spaces of the scheme. You know, you talked about taking the cars away from that one side. You've created some places to sit and to dwell. When on your return visits, are you pleased with what you see? Has it been, you know, adopted positively by the community? Do you see it as functioning, or are there some things that you would add or change, or if you could do it again?
If I could do it again. Yeah, I mean, I love going back, obviously. You know, one of the big challenges was trying to get people back using the space. You know, it wasn't busy. You'd remember going there and, you know, it was very underutilized. And so, you know, people are, you know, definitely using it. And what we've done is tried to create space which is bookable for the local residents to use. So for example, the assembly halls, which is this massive beautiful space, again Art Deco assembly hall, which is right in the town hall, can be hired out for really large events such as weddings and exhibitions. I think you can get circa 300 people in. But, you know, going into it is beautiful. There's a lovely marble-lined entrance foyer. It's got this original stylish sort of pay box, huge glass-like fittings, curving canopy. It's beautiful interwar sort of civic architecture. And that, again, you know, you don't get a lot of those spaces in central London. And actually, the local community, are in there. They're using it. But also, it's got elements like the registry office. Like I said, you know, I went there and registered. You know, I also went there for my wife's passport inauguration and in the council chambers. Which you know, there's some beautiful spaces there. There's the mayor's parlour. There's a new committee room. So in the basement underneath the new courtyard, there is a new committee room, which has sort of roof lights that come through from the paved courtyard. There's also an enterprise centre. So the creation of the new atrium in the middle of the town hall and the new bridge link across has enabled both light and air to flood through the building. And as a result, the basement now has become a usable space. Before, it was a very dark, unappealing location, pretty damp. And now it's actually, there's a company called Tripodder in there. They manage it on behalf of the council, so local people can hire out workspace. Again, we used it on the final phase of the project. We had some space down there. So bringing the people back into the building would not be a success if it wasn't being used by not just council employees, but members of the community. And that is certainly something we've achieved. With that brings challenges. Because obviously the security is important. And for example, the new bridge link across, you know, there is a real merge with the reception, a real merge of both employees and local people. So again, working with the local, with the council security, we had to make sure that there was very clear lines where people could get through, couldn't get through. And again, it worked very well. But in these buildings, they're not always so easily, you know, those zones aren't always so easily created. But, you know, it was really, really important. As I said to you before, the actual town hall itself had sort of evolved and grown and new bits have been added to it, which had actually stopped it from being legible. It was very challenging to get around the building. You know, once you got in, you were kind of like a bit where you are, which isn't unusual in a lot of civic buildings, even more modern ones, to be honest with you. And this was one where we were taking out those sort of ad hoc alterations and additions, and we revealed the original building form. It actually, you know, it restored the original primary circulation routes, which were really obvious and made, again, clear sight lines. You knew where you were going and you could see. And actually, the atrium was a good example of that, where the reception effectively blocked it all off. So stripping the old reception out, it enabled this sort of strategic and physical link from one end to the other, because it wasn't very welcoming, you know. And as I said, it was we've now created a really welcoming and exciting sort of first impression. And actually, that atrium is a focal point where you get historic and modern aspects of the building mixing with employees and the public.
You like to go back and visit, and I'm sure that offers like huge learnings and kind of also a sense of like accomplishment, but also, you know, the ability to observe the use. And I think, you know, are there formal processes of post-occupancy? You talked about the kind of carbon reduction ambition, or is that something that you look to bring in formally, or you expect Cartwright Picard to be kind of monitoring over time? Or is that something that you think is vital that we start to do?
Yeah, 100% vital, because, you know, we'll be measured by the success of these buildings. And it's something that's run, the council do that, because a lot of it's owned by the council and occupied by the council. And we do touch base with them and to see if we are achieving the targets. So thankfully, the feedback we've had is, yes, we have, which is brilliant. And also it does, you're absolutely right, it's about learning and what worked and what, you know, and what didn't work well. And, you know, There's been changes to the Civic Centre. The ground floor of the Civic Centre was a sort of community, was a community area where you could come in and you could pay your bills, and it was the less sort of democratic side of the council, which, you know, initially was, there wasn't a main reception. It was more people walking with iPads and you'd get engaged with them. You know, don't think that worked. You know, it needed to be a bit more of a formal reception. So there has been adaptations to the ground floor of the basement, the ground floor of the Civic Centre, which again, it just goes back to that flexibility in the space. And it's the same in the town hall, you know, enabling these, there's a lot of historic rooms which could be used for registry. It could be used for getting married. It can be used for meetings. It could be used, yeah, just as open space for, you know, open plan workspace. And I think it's building that flexibility into it is an absolutely integral part of this. And the Civic, with a blank sheet of paper, we were able to do that, you know, I don't want to say easily, but, you know, there's the ability to do that and change with the evolving world we're in. The town hall, the same, but obviously with more challenges around the historic elements, which you had to integrate into the design.
That's a great bit of learning to bring back the desk, or I imagine it was a desk that you, but it's interesting to know, you know, why didn't it work? You know, is it just legibility? Is, again, is it this clarity? Where do you go when you come in the door?
Yeah. And, you know, I think it was probably similar to how the town hall was. You sort of arrived and you didn't really know where to go. You know, we still like to see people face to face and ask them a question. Where do I need to go? Who do I need to speak to? How long do I need to wait? You know, or even just a simple question, am I in the right place? You know, and I think sometimes, and I'm not saying this is the case on this, but, you know, sometimes things look great written down, but actually you put people into it and how they act, you know, people interact with each other and differently. And I think there was just a general feeling that actually creating a sense of arrival was something, and it worked really well in the town hall where we've got this lovely big reception in there, and it's, you know, it works really well. So I think people like that clarity, and that it goes hand in hand with the wayfinding and the clarity of vision and feeling safe and, you know, busy places. It all works very much hand in hand. And I think it goes back to that.
It's an interesting point that to feel safe and to feel welcome, you kind of have to know where you are and where you're going and not have that sense of uncertainty, which we often, as you said, in many of these civic buildings, you do feel lost or like they've become aggregates in hospitals too often because they've had little bits added and the legibility is kind of gone. And then you have to read 100 signs and ask 4 times to kind of get to the right department. So, James, many people will have heard of the Brixton riots and understand that this is like a context with like a long history of mistrust between the Black community there and, you know, figures of authority, in particular police suppression. So I imagine that it was important to engage with that community. And maybe you can talk a little bit about how that worked and, you know, was that part of your process and, you know, and what happened?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The success of this project was down to getting, you know, the community engaged and supportive. And there is a history of struggles and challenges in Brixton and the wider community. One of the buildings which we demolished and rebuilt as homes was Olive Morris House. And Olive Morris was a prominent activists in the UK in the 1970s, and empowering a community through education and activism. And so we worked very, very closely with the Remembering Olive Collective, which to make sure that we focused on the right things. You know, we asked them, would they like the building renamed? That wasn't something they wanted to do. What they wanted to do was try and create some sort of commemoration around the building. So the ground floor and the basement of what was Olive Morris House, which is now known as Court, Regal Court and the Darkers Howe Apartments, is actually the new borough archive. So the London Borough of Lambeth are creating a new archive, which opens in March of this year, which is really, really exciting. And they've got, you know, absolutely fantastic items that you can go and have a look at. And as part of that, what we've done is we've created a a cornerstone to commemorate Olive on the outside of the building. And then inside the building, we've also, there were some elements in the old building that had, so some etched glass with a picture of Olive on it. We've reused that. We've also renamed one of the reading names after her. So, and we had this big launch in the summer of last year. And yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. We met members of her family and we did the big unveiling. And it was really reconnecting the community with, you know, it's not just about buildings, it's about people. And actually, they didn't want the name of the building, but it was so important to commemorate her and in Brixton, and that's what we've done. And we've also renamed the affordable homes, which we've delivered on that block, the Darkest Howe apartments. So Darkest Howe was also an activist, writer and broadcaster, and he had a pivotal role in the British movement for racial justice and black liberation, and goes back to the points that you were raising around the Brixton riots. So what we've done there, we've named one of the buildings after him, but also in the reception we've got his picture and a bio about him, and his wife and daughter came along for the night. And again, it was just a wonderful experience to really celebrate those people and what they did and what they mean to the people of Brixton and the community.
It brings to light this kind of idea you talked about, you know, creating the place first, but this layering of history and this embedding of history in the fabric of the new buildings. Do you see that as a vital part of really connecting people to new places?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got the red line of your project, and it's so important that you connect with everything that's already there, and you know, almost the cultural assets which already exist in the local community, be that buildings, be that people, be that movements or clubs, or you see it everywhere. And if you can tap into that, and it's challenging, but you know, it is done. If you tap into that and you create that and you garner support, and you start delivering elements of your project which interact with them or support them, you know, creating that central hub, you know, creating that place where everyone can use is just so important. And actually, it doesn't normally take much to sort of sow that seed. And, you know, talking about Olive Morris and Darkest Howe, that was a really good example of that. Of, you know, we worked with them, you know, with some really clear objectives, and we listened a lot. And, you know, we've created something in which, you know, will last for a long time. We've created a legacy. You know, it's not just another building. And yeah, you know, and it's on the site of an old building that was named after her, but it's actually taking her legacy and making sure we carry it on for generations. And I think that is what is really, really important. Yes, this is a new neighborhood and a new civic quarter, but it's within a really well-established community. And without their support, it would never have been successful.
Developers are often associated, you know, especially in this context, with, you know, gentrification, displacement, kind of the erasure or cleansing of history. You know, what do you see as your role in, you know, preventing that happening? Is that something that is front of mind? And do you have advice for people on, you know, who are kind of moving into neighborhoods, how not to be, you know, part of that, you know, that idea of development, to challenge that? That kind of, I guess, philosophy of development that sees those kind of negative impacts of regeneration.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, unfortunately, the developer tag is often a negative one to a lot of people, which, you know, is frustrating, disappointing. And, you know, I think at Muse Places, we always encourage those who maybe have their view to go and talk to our partners, look at what we've delivered, talk to the communities at which we are now involved in, and see that, you know, that isn't always the case, you know. And in terms of tapping in and making sure that we don't lose what is often, you know, a rich vein of history, and whether that's history through people or buildings or existing, you know, groups, etc. I think, you know, we're, a lot of the time we come into, you know, I knew Brixton pretty well. Did I know everything about Brixton when I got involved in this project? Absolutely not. So you have to take a huge amount of time to listen, to sit down and listen to what people want and actually engage with the right people. You know, our partner was Lambeth here. You know, we were able to tap into their contacts and make sure that we were speaking to the right people and understanding what their drivers were, what their concerns were. And I think that's all you can do is listen. And I think if you are the right partner, you will do the right thing. And I don't think there's a hard and fast rule for it. And don't get me wrong, regeneration is always going to be, there's always going to be contentious. There's buildings will get knocked down that, you know, 99.9% of people don't like, but one person might like it. Same with areas of scrubland where, you know, you may look at it as a bit of scrubland, but actually, do you know what? It's been a really important area for someone. And I think it's understanding that and putting yourself in their shoes. Again, different demographic. You've got to listen. And by doing that, you will put yourself in a position where hopefully, you know, more people will be happier than not.
Thanks so much, James, for sharing that story and that message of like learning, that taking that time to listen, to engage with the right people, and not losing the history of these places that we are proud to renew and develop with their communities.
Thanks very much.
Thank you to our organization members and supporters on Patreon for making this show possible. If you love what we do, please consider joining them. Thanks for listening to the Developer Podcast, produced by Simon Mercer with music by Fortet. If you love what we do, please consider supporting us, like and subscribe to the podcast, come to a Festival of Place event, buy a copy of our magazine, become a Patreon, or sign up to be an organization member.